Today, however, his magic was red. A bright, overexposed red, almost pink, and crackling at its edges with wisps of black curling fire. It still did what he wanted, moving plates in and out of the sink and stacking them neatly, but it certainly looked scary. With an effort, he concentrated on bringing back his magic's normal color. Nothing changed, and he began to grow frustrated. More and more of his concentration moved away from the dishes and from his friends outside and toward bending his magic to his own preference. That, after all, was what the color of magic was really about. A warlock's magic was under his own control. It was whatever color the warlock wished it to be. The glow around the dishes persisted in its tacky, reddish haze. Magnus's frustration grew, and finally, when a quiet voice called his name from the door behind him, he lost his grasp completely, and a bowl flew end over end away from the sink and broke as it struck the windowsill. The magic faded completely. Magnus turned to see Jem standing in the doorway, his face grave.
"Sorry," Magnus said, "but the color, I don't know what it means."
Jem shook his head. "I don't either. Do the others know?"
"This is the first it's happened," Magnus said. "It wasn't doing this yesterday."
"Another thing to research today," Jem said. Magnus nodded slowly.
"I guess that's all we can do. It's a bad sign, though. Are you coming with us?"
"If you wish me to," said Jem. "I said I would help you with the Xinyan situation." Magnus picked up a bowl.
"No need to risk yourself. You said dangerous people were following you. I assume some of them frequent shadow markets."
"Some of them," Jem admitted.
"I'd rather not deal with Tessa's wrath if anything happened to you. Stay here. We can confer when we get back."
At that moment, Alec appeared, wearing what for him were going out clothes. Gray jeans, a many times washed blue t-shirt that matched his eyes, and a pinstriped gray and white shirt with the sleeves rolled up to the elbows.
"We should go," he said to Magnus. "The portal finally seems demon-free."
Magnus handed the bowl he was holding to Jem. He ignored Jem's raised eyebrow.
"Did you ever have to wash dishes in the Silent City?"
"No," said Jem.
"Then this'll be good practice."
On the way to the Downworlder concession, Tien took them past a huge brick Gothic building with two spires on either side of its door. It looked like it had been teleported in straight from the French countryside. Alec was used to taking note of houses of worship when he traveled. It was always good to know where the closest weapons cache could be found, and he'd been frustrated by not really being able to identify religious buildings on site in this city of so many different mundanes and mundane religions. This building, however, was familiar in a way that made it stand out in a sea of unfamiliarity.
"Is that a church?"
he said to Tien as they walked. Tien nodded.
"Su Jia Hui Cathedral," he said, "also called St. Ignatius. It's got the largest cache of Nephilim arms in the city, if we need them. But it's also swarming with tourists most of the time, so we don't use it much."
He was right. The place was abuzz with activity. Tourists lined up outside to go in. Some of it seemed to be under renovation also. Scaffolding was wrapped around most of the stained glass windows along one side.
"Maybe we should stop by and pick up a few more weapons," Simon muttered. "I feel a little naked going into this market with only one Seraph blade and nothing else."
"Just like that dream you have sometimes," Clary said brightly, and Isabel snorted with a hastily suppressed laugh.
Jace gave Simon a quick, sympathetic look.
"Oh, maybe Simon is right," he said. "The bad guys seem to be able to find us when they want to, but we can't find them."
"We should have gone in gear."
"No," Tien said. "This is better. The Institute and the concession are on fairly good terms as these things go, but the code piece has made everybody more tense. We need to be seen to come in a spirit of friendship."
We'll see how much they like our spirit of friendship when demons swarm the place, Jace said, and Simon looked over at him nervously.
Alec, meanwhile, looked at Magnus, who seemed relieved that they wouldn't be going into the church. Magnus, like most warlocks, didn't love spending time in mundane religious buildings. Mundane religions didn't usually have much kindness for warlocks, and that was putting it mildly.
After some twists and turns, Tien led them through an elaborate red gate into a pedestrianized cobblestone street. The gate was guarded by two bronze statues. One, a rather intimidating wolf on its hind legs, its claws up in either threat or welcome. Alec couldn't be sure. The other, a large bat, its wings folded over its body in a way that made it look strangely coquettish.
"Welcome to the Downworlder Concession," Tien said, gesturing proudly.
There was, at least at first, nothing particularly Downworld about the place, although it wasn't like Downworlders had their own styles of architecture. It looked like Shanghai in miniature, really, an eclectic pile of the city's history all built on top of itself. Traditional Chinese curved roofs jostled against Western-style buildings, some looking like they had been teleported directly from the English or French countryside, some all classical columns and marble, and all the people were Downworlders. The streets weren't crowded this time of morning, but Alec was amazed to see fairies, werewolves, even the occasional warlock walking around. No glamours or illusions at all. He saw Magnus taking it in as well, a place where Downworlders lived freely, without having to constantly hide themselves from the mundane world. It was strange. It was nice. Tien caught his look.
"The whole concession is warded from mundanes," he said. "The arch looks like the entrance to a ruined building, destroyed in the 1940s and never rebuilt."
"Why doesn't this exist anywhere else?" Clary said. "Why aren't there glamored Downworlder neighborhoods all over?"
Magnus, Tien, and Jace all spoke at the same time.
Tien said, "Shanghai has a very specific and unusual history that allowed this to happen."
Magnus said, "The Shadowhunters would never allow it."
Jace said, "The Downworlders in most places fight each other too much."
They all looked at one another.
"I think it's probably all those things," Alec said diplomatically.
Magnus nodded, but looked around, distracted.
"Any chance we could grab some food?" he said.
Alec gave him a funny look.
"We just had breakfast."
"Research demands calories," Magnus said.
"I could eat," put in Clary. "Tien, is there dim sum?"
"There is a lot of dim sum," Tien confirmed.
"Follow me."
Though it was in better shape than the neighborhood of old Shanghai that they'd been to a couple of days before, the Downworlder concession was the same kind of confusing warren of narrow streets. What Alec took to be an alley turned out to be the entrance to a house. What he took to be a storefront turned out to be a road. Alec trusted Tien. He was a fellow shadow hunter. He was a Ka. He had been vouched for by Jem. But he couldn't help thinking that there was no way they would be able to find their way out again without Tien's help. He exchanged a glance with Jace, who was clearly thinking the same thing, then reached around to put a reassuring hand on his bow before remembering he didn't have it. After a few turns, the street opened up onto a larger courtyard, with restaurants on all sides and clusters of plane trees in the center. Tien gestured around him.
"Welcome to the Dim Sum District, so to speak.
I don't know how often you eat at Downworlder establishments."
"Maybe more frequently than you'd think," said Clary.
"Well," said Tien, "there's vampire dim sum, fairy dim sum, and werewolf dim sum."
"Which do we want?"
"We definitely want werewolf dim sum," Tien said. Werewolf dim sum turned out to be not all that different from New York mundane dim sum, except that the tough, gray-haired women pushing the carts around were all werewolves. They also spoke no English,
But this was, for one thing, also not very different from New York, and for another, easily solved by simply pointing to the stacked steamer baskets and metal bowls as needed. Alec was not the biggest kanji fan, and had eaten only a small bowl so as not to insult Mother Yun, so he dug into shrimp dumplings, turnip cakes, steamed buns, clams in black bean sauce, stir-fried gailan, and carefully watched Tian's face and the subtle shake of his head when things came by that were too werewolfish for them. Tiny blood sausage, slices of raw red meat, what appeared to be some kind of deep-fried small rodent in sweet and sour sauce. Tian tried to stop Magnus from grabbing chicken feet, but once Magnus was contentedly nibbling on one of them, he gave in and ordered some chicken feet of his own. Oddly, so did Jace.
"You like chicken feet?" Tian said, surprised.
"I like everything," Jace said, mouth full of food.
Simon shook his head. "My ancestors fled their home country so they wouldn't have to eat chicken feet anymore. I'm not about to start now. Does anything on the table not have meat in it?" Tian grabbed some vegetable dumplings and mushrooms wrapped in bean curd from the next cart, and the werewolf lady gave Simon a disapproving look.
"Sorry," Tian said. "Even the ones without meat often use dry shrimp or pork fat."
"I'm used to it," Simon said with resignation.
"Also," pointed out Clary, chewing on a steamed bun, "they're werewolves."
Satiated, the team headed out again. As they walked behind Tian, Alec came over to Magnus and bumped into him affectionately.
"Hey, are you all right? You were quiet all through the meal."
"Fat and sassy," Magnus said, rubbing his stomach and smiling at Alec.
Alec smiled back, but felt an uncertain twist in his gut. The chains, the shining wound, and Magnus had awoken in the night screaming. He had claimed it was only a random nightmare, but Alec wasn't sure. He also hadn't told the rest of them about the chains on Magnus's body. He wasn't sure how exactly to bring such a thing up. Where a moment ago Alec had been in good spirits, all of a sudden he felt far away from home, unsettled and on edge. He found himself very aware that he couldn't read any of the street signs or storefronts, that he was half a world away from his child, that there were people here who might hate him for being a shadow hunter in a downworlder neighborhood, no matter how friendly relations were. The weight of the cold piece and Magnus's wound and the unknown stacked on top of unknowns came down upon him.
"I wish Max were here," he whispered to Magnus.
And that was when the thing with wings swooped down and collided violently with Tian. Magnus was distracted by the feeling in his chest. Ever since they'd passed through the gate into the concession, he'd felt it. Each time his heart beat, it sent a small throb of magic through his body, and he could feel that throb burst behind his chest wound and extend in spirals along the links of the chains on his arms. It didn't feel bad, but he didn't know what it was, and he didn't like that. He wanted to head straight for the Celestial Palace and bury himself in research. Privately, he thought talking to Peng Fang was a waste of time. In the past, he probably would have voiced this feeling. In the past, he probably would have convinced them to skip Peng's entirely and go straight to the bookstore. He was so lost in thought that he didn't see the shadow pass over them, and he was taken aback when the bird woman smashed into Tian. He saw Alec and the other New York shadow hunters drop back and reach for the few weapons they had on them, except for Simon, who put up his hands as though blocking a punch and looked around as if wondering what to do. Quickly, however, they all realized that Tian didn't seem worried. Indeed, he was smiling and laughing.
"Jin Fang,"
he was saying, and Magnus realized that the bird woman had given Tian a quick hug and, while she had moved away, was smiling at him. She was a fairy, he realized a little belatedly, and a striking one at that. A Feng Huang, a phoenix. The Chinese phoenix was an entirely different fairy from the Western phoenix, and much more beautiful.
She was almost as tall as Tian, and her gleaming black hair fell to her feet. Wings of red, yellow, and green spread from her back, rippling in the air. Her skin was traced with delicate designs in luminous gold. Her dark eyes, ringed with long lashes, shimmered as she regarded the group. Jace, Clary, and Isabel were slowly lowering their weapons in confusion. Simon continued to stare, wide-eyed, and Alec, of course, was watching Magnus, giving him a questioning look. Tian was speaking quietly to the fairy girl.
"Oh," she said in Mandarin. "I'm so sorry. Are these... ooh?"
She trailed off, smiling shyly.
"Would you like to introduce us, Tian?" said Magnus mildly.
"Yes," said Tian. "This is Jin Fang, everybody. Jin Fang," and he continued in Mandarin, "these are the Shadow Hunters of New York, and also Magnus Bane, High Warlock of Brooklyn."
The Phoenix pulled back, suddenly wary.
"I'm sorry," she said again. "I know. The code piece."
"It's okay," Magnus said. "We don't like the cold piece much ourselves."
"Jin Fang is the daughter of the weaponsmith I was talking about yesterday," Tian said. "And also," he sighed, "my girlfriend."
"Oh," said Jace. Clary whacked him on the shoulder.
Jin Fang nervously moved back over to Tian and put an arm around him. She leaned over and kissed him on the cheek, and he smiled.
"As you can imagine," Tian continued, "we've had to keep our relationship secret when others are around. My family has no problem with our being together, but there are plenty in the Shanghai Conclave who would love to use it against us."
"How do your parents feel about Tian?" Magnus said to Jin Fang. "Or their court?"
Jin Fang turned to Magnus, pleased to have someone other than Tian who could converse with her in Mandarin.
"They like him," she said, her feathers rustling a little. "And they trust him, but they don't trust his people."
She took in Alec, who had his arm draped casually around Magnus.
"How do your people feel about him?"
"I don't really have people," Magnus said. "But they seem to mostly like him. And these are all his closest friends and family right here, and I would trust them with my life."
At this, Tian raised his eyebrows. Magnus caught his look and went on.
"It's taken a few years, though. I'm vouching for you guys, by the way," he added to the rest of them, this last sentence in English.
"Tell her about the alliance,"
Alex said, nudging Magnus.
"My boyfriend wants me to tell you that he founded the Downworlder Shadowhunter Alliance," Magnus said, and batted his eyelashes at Alec. "If you know what that is?"
Jin Fang gave a wry smile.
"In Shanghai, Tian and I are the Downworlder Shadowhunter Alliance."
"I thought you said your family approved," Magnus said to Tian.
Tian looked sheepish.
"They do," he said. "But that's not the same as allowing us to be public,
much less get married.
You must know that I and they could get in serious trouble. The Code Piece forbids even business relationships between the Fae and the Nephilim, much less..."
"Sexy business," Magnus agreed.
The rest of their party were standing around politely, but beginning to look a little uncomfortable. Simon was checking his phone. Tian took note and said to Jin Fang,
"Tianai, I was hoping to talk to your parents. These Nephilim have run into a strange weapon recently, and we thought they might know about it. Maybe I could talk to them?"
You can go on," Magnus said to Tian in English for the benefit of the others. "I've been to the Sunlit Market enough times that I'm sure I can get the rest of us there."
Tian nodded. He was already scribbling an address down on a scrap of paper from his pocket.
"I'm going to go with Jin Fang. Meet us here in 2 hours, and hopefully Morgan will be willing to talk."
"Who's Morgan?" said Magnus. Tian smiled.
"The Smiths. Mo and Gan. Morgan."
"Fairies,"
Magnus said with a sigh. He took the paper, and Jin Feng and Tian disappeared down a side street fairly quickly.
"He seemed pretty happy to get away from us," Isabel observed as they left.
"Young love," said Magnus. "I'm sure you have no idea." He grinned at Isabel, and she grinned back. "We'll catch up with them later. For now, let's head to the market."
"We have a very annoying blood sommelier to meet with," Alec agreed.
"And a bookstore," Clary put in eagerly. "Do not forget the bookstore."
Now that Tian was gone, they were dependent on Magnus to navigate, which was fine as far as Alec was concerned. Tian was friendly, and knowing he was also dealing with the complexities of a shadow hunter downworlder relationship made him more sympathetic, but he had felt a little babysat. He knew shadow markets, he knew downworlders, he knew Peng Fang. It was a matter of pride, a bit, that they could handle this errand on their own. As a guide, of course, Magnus was a bit more hesitant than Tian had been.
"You're sure you know where you're going?"
said Alec a few times, as Magnus considered two possible paths.
"Well, this way seems familiar," Magnus would say, and stride off in that direction.
The others put their confidence totally in the warlock, which made Alec feel like it would be disloyal to raise doubts. They found themselves, after a few twists and turns, in a dark and narrow alley. Unlike the rest of the concession, which was well-kept, clean, and bright in the sunny late morning, this place felt decrepit, like it was rotting away around them, and it was cast in shadow from the surrounding buildings. The pleasant smells of food and autumn flowers were gone, replaced by a humid, fetid odor, not like the crush of people in a city, but like a place long abandoned by anything living. All of them could sense that something was off. Jace and Clary each drew the one seraph blade apiece they had brought, and Simon stood at the back of the alley, vigilantly scanning all around him. Isabel stood by him, looking less worried but no less alert. Alec had his hand on his own seraph blade, though he hadn't yet drawn it.
"I think maybe we took a wrong turn,"
he began to say, but choked on the words as he looked over at Magnus. Magnus was glowing, an angry scarlet flare around him in the gloom of the alley. His upper lip was curled back from his teeth, and his head was in the air, like an animal sniffing the air for predators or prey. His eyes, too, shone in the dark, yellow-green, an alien in a way Alec had never thought of them. They were glassy and unfocused. He looked like he was listening to something far away, something none of the rest of them could hear. And it must have been the illusion of the strange light filtered down through the buildings, but he seemed taller, sharper.
"Magnus?" Alec said quietly,
but Magnus didn't seem to hear him. There was a skittering noise from behind and above him, but when he whirled around, there was nothing there. The shadow hunters made their way down the alley carefully. Jason and Isabel reached the far end first and waited as Clary led Simon, who looked like a cat with his hackles raised, slowly down the lane, standing shoulder to shoulder with him. Alec waited for Magnus to follow, but he seemed to be stuck in place. His hair was wild and his breathing strenuous as if he'd been running. Alec gently took him by the hand, and Magnus led him, though when his eyes rolled toward Alec, there was no recognition in them. Alec felt a jolt of fear through him. Magnus was never distracted, never confused. It was one of the things he loved best about his boyfriend. He knew that if Magnus was forced to walk into hell itself, he would do so with his hair perfect, his clothes pressed, his eye game on point. And he had to admit that even now, Magnus looked good. His expression may have been hungry and hollow, but it brought out his cheekbones. And Alec for just a moment wondered what it would be like to kiss him while looking into eyes lambent with green and gold. It was a strange combination, this feeling of fear and desire. He forced himself to walk forward, leading Magnus by the hand. Magnus allowed himself to be led. He seemed to barely notice. Alec held his breath. Sure, they would be attacked at any moment, but at the end of the alley was another archway, and once all six of them were through it, the sun again shone down and the air was fine and calm. Between one moment and the next, all the peculiarity went out of Magnus and he was again himself. He looked surprised as Alec threw his arms around him, hugging him tight.
"Everybody okay?" said Clary.
"Sure," said Simon, though his voice remained shaky. "Nothing happened, right?"
They all looked to Magnus. Of course they did, Alec thought. Even with all their experience, they expected Magnus to have the answers to any mystery. He shook his head, looking grave.
"I don't know," he said. "We were walking, and then there were those voices."
Isabel and Clary exchanged worried looks.
"We didn't hear any voices," Isabel said.
"What were they saying?"
asked Alec quietly. Magnus looked at Alec helplessly.
I don't remember."
"You'd think the Downworlders would do something about having an alley from hell right through the middle of their neighborhood," said Jace.
Magnus shook his head.
"I don't know where we were," he said. "But that was definitely not Shanghai."
Magnus had not been lying. He didn't remember what had happened. And he didn't remember what the voices had been saying or whether he recognized who had been speaking. What he didn't say was what he did remember. How powerful he had felt. How strong. Like the rest of them, he had been sure they would be attacked, but he had felt only a contempt for the forces that might attack them, as though he might wipe them away with a wave of his hand. Now he felt a strange emptiness, both relieved and disappointed that his feeling hadn't been tested. He was the navigator, however, and he tried to put all these feelings aside and concentrate on remembering where they were going. He had been here before, but it had been 80-some years ago. Still, he was able to follow the noise. And soon they were passing more Downworlders, all heading in roughly the same direction. Groups of young werewolves, pairs of older vampires huddled under large black umbrellas, and a few fairies who gave the shadow hunters worried looks and crossed the street to avoid passing them. Alec took note.
"I don't much like being looked at like the enemy here," he said. "We're all on the same side, Shadowhunters and Downworlders."
Jace quirked an eyebrow.
"I believe the Clave's official position is that we're on opposite sides."
"It's ridiculous," said Clary. "How many fairies were actually on Sebastian's side in the war? The Queen, her court? It must be a tiny percentage of them, but we've punished them all."
"The Clave punished them all," said Simon. "We haven't done anything. We tried to prevent the cold peace."
"As long as we can explain that to each of them individually, I'm sure we'll be fine," said Jace.
"Maybe we could get t-shirts made," Simon agreed. "We tried to prevent the cold peace."
Magnus gestured toward another stone archway.
"Through here, I think."
"Our luck with random archways hasn't been great,"
muttered Isabel. But they went through anyway, and after a brief moment of eerie radiance that caused them all to catch their breath, the passage shimmered and expanded, and suddenly a tall fairy with a sideways grin and a long brocade jacket was trying to sell them wolfsbane cologne. The market square was huge and open, paved with massive slabs of stone. Shadow markets were usually twisty, labyrinthine affairs full of makeshift stalls and tents, everyone jockeying for customers' attention and shouting over one another. But the sunlit market of Shanghai was an altogether more civilized affair, with stalls and sheds neatly lined up in wide rows, shaded by Shanghai's ubiquitous plane trees. Cafes had outdoor terraces with neatly kept tables, and at the center was a huge fountain with a stone figure at each of the corners. From here, Magnus could see a dragon and a bird that looked like Jin Fang. And if he remembered correctly, there were a tiger and a tortoise on the other side. The fountain sprayed in colors, red, yellow, and green. And while the water shot many feet into the air, it all remained precisely within the perimeter of the stone pool. Magnus noted with some interest that he could see the aura of the magic responsible for this, a silver glow that, he thought, would usually have been invisible to him. He was beginning to get a sense of why Xin Yun had thought the Sveffenthorn wound was a gift. But given the chains on his arms, it seemed like a gift with a ludicrously high cost. No gift was worth accepting chains as well. The market was more well-organized than most, but it was still a bustle of chaotic activity. An elderly vampire who looked half-melted stood under a black velvet parasol and haggled with a sighted mundane over obsidian steaks. Two warlocks were engaged in what appeared to be a magical drinking game at one of the cafe tables, and every few seconds miniature fireworks exploded from their fingertips with loud cracks. In front of the fountain, four werewolves were howling in erratic harmony. Magnus dropped back a step to murmur in Alec's ear, "The barbershop quartet of the night. What music they make."
"There's one thing I don't get," said Clary. "If the Downworlders have their own district in the city, why do they need a market? Why not just have permanent stores?"
"They do," said Magnus, leading them through the crowd toward the outer perimeter of stalls. "That's why this isn't really a shadow market. It's just a market, like you'd find in any mundane neighborhood." The outer circle of the market had been all food stalls when Magnus had last been here, and despite decades of upheaval and change in the city, this was still the same. Everywhere was a strange combination of mundane and downworlder food, with Peking duck and mapo tofu, baozi and manto laid out in rows next to candied fairy fruit and flowers on sticks. Magnus bought a candied tangerine, then offered it to Alec with a smile. Alec took it, but he was still giving Magnus nervous glances when he didn't think his boyfriend was looking. Magnus wished he could remember what had happened in the alley. He also wished that the Shadow Hunters would be a bit more discreet. They had all, he thought, gotten accustomed to the New York market, where they were well-known and garnered friendly glances from most of the vendors and at least some of the patrons. Here, no matter how good Tien said the relationship was between the Conclave and Downworld, there was still a team of five Lawai Nephilim.
"We're getting some looks," said Jace, always with a bit more situational awareness than the rest of them. "Oh, maybe we should split up."
"This Peng Fang probably won't want to meet with all of us," Clary said hopefully. "Maybe some of us could just go straight to the bookstore?"
"Oh, look at the heroes," Magnus said with a little smirk. "Save the world a few times and you start shirking responsibilities."
"Honestly, Peng Fang is terrible," said Alec.
"Betrayer," said Magnus.
"I too would like to go straight to the bookstore," put in Simon.
"Fine," said Magnus. "All of you get out. The bookstore is just through the night quarter, where all the vampires are, and to the left. It should be hard to miss. I will handle Peng Fang by myself."
"You will not," Alec said. "You will handle Peng Fang along with me."
Magnus thought about objecting, but he'd rather have Alec along with him anyway. Peng Fang could be a lot to deal with.
They sent the other New York Shadow Hunters away, and when they were out of earshot, Magnus said,
"I appreciate the backup, but you might need to wait outside Peng Fang's. Last time, he clammed up the moment you arrived."
"That's fine," said Alec. "I'm not worried about Peng Fang. I'm worried about you."
He peered at Magnus.
"You really don't remember anything from the alley?"
"Nothing happened," Magnus said, and Alec looked like he was going to respond, but he didn't.
They passed into the night quarter themselves, through a huge red velvet curtain. Inside, all was dim,
lit only by a truly enormous number of candles in silver holders, and high above them, a patchwork of fabric and canvas roofs blocked out any hint of the sun. It was like walking into a very gothic circus tent.
"Vampires and their candles," Alex said under his breath.
"I know. They're even vulnerable to fire," Magnus said. "But they can't resist. They're like moths in a way."
He was starting to wonder how they would find Peng Fangs when he noticed Alec had stopped walking alongside him. He turned and saw his boyfriend looking wide-eyed at something to the side and followed his gaze. Then it took a moment for him to realize what he was looking at. There, in front of a velvet-draped stall, vampires and their velvet too, Magnus thought, was a full-size cardboard standee of Alec. He blinked at it. The cardboard cutout was in full Shadow Hunter gear and had Alec's face. Cardboard Alec was holding up a crystal decanter full of crimson liquid and a speech bubble emerging from his mouth read in flowing script, "Mmm, that's good blood."
"Magnus," said Alec slowly, "do you think maybe I have brain damage?"
"Wait here," Magnus said, and began striding purposefully toward the tent, magic gathering in his hands. Before he could reach the entrance, though, a stocky man had emerged from the stall and was extending his arms in welcome, a huge grin on his face. He had hair like a bumblebee who had become a rock star, and he was wearing a red-lined black suit jacket unbuttoned over a t-shirt with an illustration of a steam train on it. The cloud of steam formed puffy gray letters that read, "Here comes the Vein Train."
"Peng Fang," said Magnus, "I immediately regret having come to speak with you."
"Magnus Payne," Peng Fang said. "I haven't seen you in, well, it's been simply forever."
"It's been 3 years," Alec said dryly.
"You kicked us out of the Paris Shadow Market because you said Shadow Hunters were bad for business."
Peng Fang looked thrilled.
"And Alec Lightwood. Hey, I'm so glad to see you two lovebirds are still together. Inspiring a new era of cooperation between Shadow Hunters and Downworlders. Here, let me give both of you a hug."
Magnus held up a hand politely.
"No touching, Peng Fang. You know the rule."
"But..."
"No touching."
It wasn't that Magnus objected to hugging, per se, but Peng Fang had always been enthusiastic about Magnus and everyone else. Magnus had laid down the rule early in their acquaintance, sometime in the mid-18th century, and he had never had any reason to lift it.
"What brings you to Shanghai? What brings you to my shop?"
he continued, smiling broadly at them.
"Never mind that," said Alec, barely keeping it together. "What brings me to your shop?"
he gestured at the standee. Peng Fang looked back at it with eyebrows raised, as though he'd just noticed its existence.
"My dear boy, you're famous. You founded the Downworlder Shadow Hunter Alliance. You've been a hero of two wars. You must understand how helpful it is for business to let people know that you've been to my shop." "You kicked me out of your shop," Alec said, and Peng Fang held up his hands to shush him.
Alec ignored this.
"And you hit on Magnus."
"I hit on everyone," Peng Fang shrugged.
"Do not take it personally."
He leaned toward Magnus.
"You must come through to the shop. I just got my hands on some vintage stuff. Pre-Accords, very hard to come by. I can't say more, but let's say there's something a little fishy about his provenance."
Magnus stared at him.
"Mermaid blood. It's mermaid blood," he clarified.
"No, Peng Fang. We still don't drink blood," Magnus sighed. "We've come for gossip."
"You're missing out," said Peng Fang. "Come inside."
At the entrance to the stall,
He pulled the curtain back with a courtly bow, rather at odds with his t-shirt, and waved them inside. The interior was lined with glass cases filled with cut crystal vials and decanters. They glinted in the candlelight, but Pengfang ignored them.
"None of this rubbish," he said,
dismissing the vials and taking a candle from atop a large stained barrel.
"This stall is just for advertising and selling plonk by the cup."
He turned to Alec.
"Recent mundane blood, the kind of stuff you get anywhere on the street. You know what I'm talking about," he added to Magnus.
"I don't," said Magnus.
Pengfang's smile never wavered.
"Follow me," he said. "Let's speak in my office."
He pushed a rug aside with his foot, revealing a dank stone spiral staircase that descended into the ground below the stall. Alec gave Magnus a look of concern, and Magnus returned it, but they had come this far. And so they followed Pengfang down into the depths. Alec hadn't liked Pengfang 3 years ago, when he hated Alec, and he didn't like him any better now that Pengfang had decided they were great friends. He already, he thought, had too much going on to be following a shady vampire down an underground passage by candlelight on the off chance he had useful information. He wished they'd skipped the whole business and gone straight to the bookstore. He kept one hand on the hilt of the Seraph Blade at his belt, sure that at any moment Pengfang would turn and lunge for them, either to bite them, or kiss them, or both. At the end of the hallway was another red curtain, and when they passed through it, Alec relaxed a little. This was still a cellar, but it was lit with permanent fixtures, and the floor, rather than packed dirt, was black marble. A wrought iron spiral stair headed up, and as they ascended, Alec saw that at the top were two doors, one lushly lacquered in red and black, and the other painted the same color as the dark gray walls, with a small metal sign reading, "Staff Only," in 5 languages.
"Excuse me a moment," Pengfang said, and swung the lacquered door open.
Behind it were 2 ancient vampire women with thin, blue-white skin and pale gray eyes, both wearing very old-fashioned widow's weeds. One of them was examining a small crystal vial of blood. Pengfang spoke to them in Russian. Alec couldn't understand the words, but the tone was the same unctuous manner he always used, and his smile was wide, as always. He ended with a question and looked back and forth between the ladies, who blinked at him.
"Biskor," he said, and closed the door. "Tasting room," he said to Magnus,
who smiled thinly.
"Lovely ladies, been coming to me for years. They're looking to invest in blood futures."
Alec cocked an eyebrow. "So, blood that's still inside people?" Pengfang clapped Alec on the back and laughed heartily, but didn't explain further. He opened the staff-only door and gestured them inside. Inside was a huge mahogany desk and a few wing-backed armchairs. In classic vampire style, the lights were very dim, but they had been carefully designed to glitter off the shelves of decanters and bottles that lined the back wall. Pengfang went to them and began to elaborately select and pour himself a goblet of blood. Magnus dropped into one of the chairs facing the desk and stretched his legs out. Alec remained standing, arms crossed. Pengfang turned, holding his goblet.
"Ganbei,"
he said, and took a sip. Magnus and Alec remained silent, and Fang flashed them a toothy, red-stained smile.
"What can I help my favorite customers with today?"
"Well, we're looking for a few things right now," Alec said. "The situation with portals, for example, they've been going wrong all over Shanghai, it seems." Pengfang took another sip.
"That's not exactly juicy gossip. They've been going wrong all over the world, sounds like. Why you two are investigating, I have no idea. The conclave's been all over trying to figure it out."
"But you hear things," said Magnus, "all over Downworld. Any interesting theories?"
"Oh, plenty blame the Shadow Hunters, of course,"
Fang said with a dismissive wave of his free hand.
Ever since the code piece, they get blamed for everything. But that's silly, of course. Portals are warlock magic. Let's see. Some say the fairies have been sabotaging them.
I can't imagine how they'd be able to do that, Magnus said doubtfully.
Neither can I, agreed Peng Fang.
Unless they're in league with somebody very powerful. And I mean very powerful.
A greater demon? Said Alec.
Greater than greater, said Fang, giving them another grin.
A prince of hell. The prince of hell.
Not, began Magnus.
No, said Fang immediately. Not him,
but close.
Samael.
Alec did his best not to react at all.
Samael,
he said, chuckling. Everyone knows Samael is gone. Has been for, well, basically forever.
So he's dead, said Fang,
though that hadn't been exactly what Alec had said.
So am I,
but that hasn't stopped me running a successful international business concern, has it? No. You know as well as I do that you can't keep a prince of hell down forever.
For a while, sure.
For longer than I or even you, he added, gesturing at Magnus, have been around, definitely. But not forever. And Samael is, after all, the maker of the way.
The what?
Said Alec. Fang looked impatient.
The finder of paths, the world burrower, the render of veils, any of this ringing a bell?
Not at all, Alec said. Fang made a disapproving noise in the back of his throat and drained the rest of his drink.
What do they teach these shadow hunters? Samael. He's the guy who opened the paths from the demon realms into this world in the first place. He weakened the wards of the world, or that's what they say.
He reached down for the decanter and refilled his goblet.
So, he went on, when things go wrong with portals, naturally people start talking about how Samael is the source of it.
Do you believe that? Magnus said.
Peng Fang smiled. I don't believe anything unless I get paid for it, Magnus Bane. I found that to be a good way to keep my head on my shoulders and stakes out of my chest.
We're also looking for a couple of warlocks, Magnus said. A Korean woman and a green fellow with horns.
Oh, said Fang, with a distinct change of mood.
Them.
You've seen them?
Alec said, trying not to sound too eager.
Everyone's seen them,
Fang said. He sounded grumpy.
They've been all over the market for months. The woman for longer. Nobody likes them much, but they spend like sailors on leave, and they look like they kill you just as soon as look at you.
What have they been buying? Magnus said.
Now, normally,
Fang said, running his finger around the rim of his goblet.
That kind of information will cost you. But the answer is so simple. I can't in good conscience charge you.
What haven't they been buying? Spell components, plain and fancy. Random antique spell books no one's used in hundreds of years. Cheap blood in bulk. Have they bought anything from you? Magnus said.
Well now, Peng Fang said, a gleam in his eye. That would cost you.
But it doesn't really matter. None of the really serious blood magic is accessible to them without some pretty powerful spells. As long as they don't have the Book of the White or anything, we should all be fine. Alec wasn't able to stop himself from looking over at Magnus. Realizing his mistake, he quickly schooled his features into a bland expression, but Peng Fang noticed immediately.
They don't have it, do they? Right?
He sounded, for the first time, a little less self-assured.
How should I know?
Magnus said with an impenetrable smile.
Well, let's hope for all our sakes.
They don't, Peng Fang said. He drained his cup again and began to fuss with pouring another.
I haven't seen it myself, but people are saying that these warlocks have been bringing demons into the concession. That's strictly prohibited, of course, he added to Alec.
Has it been reported to the Shadow Hunters? Said Alec, already knowing the answer. Since the relationship between the two is so good here and all?
Peng Fang shrugged.
Nobody's been hurt yet, and nobody wants a repeat of 37.
Alec had no idea what this meant, but Magnus frowned.
Gentlemen, it's glorious to see you as always, but I'm afraid that I must tend to my Russians.
Alec was surprised by the abruptness, but Magnus got up immediately and nodded.
Thanks for your time, Peng Fang. We must be off too. We've got an appointment with Mogan.
The Smiths?
Peng Fang sounded surprised.
Oh, don't take this one,
he advised Magnus, with a gesture in Alec's direction.
Most Fae don't care for Shadow Hunters these days.
Magnus was rustling around in his pocket and produced a wad of bills from it.
Some yuan for your trouble.
Peng Fang made a pronounced show of refusing the money.
Magnus! Magnus, we've been friends for so long. I haven't told you anything worth a payment today. That's how much good faith you can have in me. I'm not some two-bit crook like Johnny Rook.
Magnus pressed the money into his hand anyway.
Peng Fang tried to hug him again, and with a final no, Magnus headed down the spiral staircase with Alec following.
They retraced their steps back through the cellar and up the stone staircase into the stall. The ground floor of the shop was dark, but they could still easily see the glass cabinets covered in Chinese labels and their contents. The amount of blood on hand was beginning to get to Alec, and he was happy to go out the front door and back onto the streets of the concession, where it was still a fine, sunny afternoon.
"Who's Johnny Rook again?"
Alec muttered as they left.
Magnus shrugged. "Some two-bit crook."
Chapter 9. The Celestial Palace. Alec was silent on the way to the bookstore, and Magnus, for the first time in a couple of years, felt an odd feeling. He felt awkward about the meeting with Peng Fang.
"I really don't know Peng Fang that well," he said. "I've just bought information from him a few times over the years."
Alec nodded, distracted.
"It's just, I know there's a lot of sketchy stuff in my past," Magnus went on.
"What was wrong with him?"
"I don't want you to worry that any of it will come back to..." "Well..."
He trailed off, and Alec stopped walking and gave him a curious look. "What's this about?" he said.
"When we were meeting with Peng Fang, I just started to think about how shady it all was, how shady a lot of the things I have to do are. I mean, Peng Fang is harmless, it's just that I'm very big with weirdos. They all think I love them."
Alec grinned affectionately. "It's your devilish charisma," he said. "You can't help it."
"Yeah, but some of the weirdos I know have turned out to be dangerous, and I know we don't want to put Max in danger,"
Magnus began.
And Alec began to laugh.
"What?"
Magnus demanded.
"Magnus, I'm the one with the dangerous job," Alec said. "I literally fight demons for a living. We've adopted Max into an incredibly dangerous family situation. I know that. I mean, forget the actual fighting, the monsters, the dark magic. I'm a gay shadow hunter in a relationship with a famous downworlder who is himself the son of a prince of hell. My father is the Inquisitor, and my parents were members of a hate group. My Parabatai has been imprisoned in the Silent City more than once."
"When you put it like that," Magnus murmured, "it doesn't sound like a great home environment."
"But it is," said Alec,
with more force than Magnus would have expected.
"I like our life, Magnus. I like that I don't know what will happen next. I like that we get a chance to give Max the kind of life that warlocks rarely get. I like that we'll be doing it together. You remember what the note said when we found Max? Who could ever love it? We could, Magnus.
we could love him. We do love him. Magnus's mind was torn. On the one hand, he was filled with affection and appreciation for Alec, for Max, for a life he never thought he could have. On the other hand, he thought of the magic growing within his chest and whatever had happened in the alley. He thought of Ragnar, currently lost in thrall to a demon after hundreds of years of doing only good with his powers. "How will we ever explain to Max," he said quietly, "where he came from, where I came from, that people will look at him and make decisions about who he is without knowing him at all, that his parents put themselves in danger over and over again, but that we'll always come back to him?"
"I think you just said it pretty well," said Alec. "And I don't know. I'm a beginner at this too. But we'll figure it out together. That's the whole idea."
He put his hand behind Magnus's head and pulled him in for a kiss. Magnus expected something quick, but Alec kissed him deeply, his mouth slightly open, warm, reassuring, and full of love and desire. Magnus allowed himself to relax into the kiss, but as he did, he felt his tongue pass over his own teeth. They felt different. Were they bigger? Was he growing fangs? What was happening to him? He decided that he would take things one step at a time, and this step was kissing Alec. Often these days, their kisses were casual, familiar, lovely in the way they felt like home, but now they kissed with a desperation and hopefulness, drowning in one another, as they had in the earliest days of being together. After what felt like a long time, Alec broke the kiss and leaned his forehead against Magnus's. "We'll figure this out. We'll figure it all out. We always do." A werewolf passed by and called out in Mandarin,
"Get a room, cute boys."
Alec turned and waved cheerily to the man.
"What did he say?"
"Let's get to the palace," Magnus suggested. "We've got figuring out to do."
They walked on, holding hands, and for a short time Magnus felt a little more at ease than he had the last couple of days. Moments after they started walking again, a fire message burst in Alec's face, startling him. He grabbed at it and read it to Magnus.
"Where are you? Found Thorn info. Fairies watching us like we're going to rob the place. Come as soon as you can, Jace."
They hurried down the street, and Magnus followed his dead reckoning until they turned onto an old street in the market, and his favorite bookstore in Asia appeared before him. The Celestial Palace was the size of a city block, a double-eaved structure that looked like one of the court buildings of Beijing, as reinterpreted by fairies. It claimed to be the oldest downworld business in Shanghai, preceding the concession itself by hundreds of years. Magnus wasn't sure he bought that story, although maybe it was right, since fairies couldn't lie. But it was an impressive piece of old Shanghai regardless, and a show of fairy power. Rather than the brick, stone, and tile that were used to construct its mundane inspirations, the palace was all colored glass, gold, and glossily polished wood. On either side of the massive double doors, a glass dragon stood guard. They were painted with mercury, and their eyes were huge sea pearls. As Magnus approached, one of them turned its serpentine head to regard them.
"Magnus Bane," it intoned in a voice like stones scraping against one another. "Long time no see."
"Huang," Magnus nodded to it, and then turned to the other.
"D."
The one called D didn't move its head.
"Wait."
With a bang, the doors burst open, and a small fairy with fox ears ran out, a huge tome under one arm. He bumped into Alec's shoulder, pushing him aside, and took off down the street. He had made it only a short distance when a prismatic ray of light burst from Dee's mouth. It struck the fox fairy, who froze and then vanished in a puff of blue smoke. The tome dropped to the ground.
There was a smell like ozone in the air. Huang regarded Magnus and Alec.
Thus ever to book thieves. Art makes lives worth living, and so theft is the next-door neighbor to murder. They shall ever be cursed and will never escape the eyes of the Huang Di.
Noted,
said Alec nervously.
We don't steal books. It's not personal, put in D. It's just business.
May your trade be always prosperous and your wealth plentiful, Magnus said.
What he said,
agreed Alec. The eyes of the dragons watched them as they passed through the doors. Alec had seen plenty of wonders in his short life so far, but even he had to admit that the interior of the Celestial Palace was something to behold. Despite appearing to be only two stories from the outside, it rose 5 levels on the inside, each ringed with a balcony boasting floor-to-ceiling shelves containing a seeming infinitude of books. The whole interior was of carved rosewood, forming the shapes of twisting vines and branches, and in the center of the huge open space above them, 3 great spheres of flame hung suspended in the air, giving the whole place a warm glow. He had been worried that they would have a hard time finding their friends in such a large place, but he caught sight of them almost immediately. Isabel was perched high up on a ladder, moving easily despite towering heels, his sister fearless about heights, as she was about most things. She called down to Simon to move the ladder very fast to the section on blood curses and screamed, "Whee!" when he did. Clary came running over, carrying a calfskin book with an unfamiliar symbol stamped on the cover.
"We found the thorn," she said.
She opened the book on a nearby table, covered with what looked to be fairy cookbooks, and pointed in triumph at the drawing of a thorned spike, below which were paragraphs of runic writing.
"So what's the deal? Why does the sleep thorn not put people to sleep?" said Magnus. "That's only what it does to Norse gods, I guess," Jace said.
"Look," he pointed to the text. "Do you want me to translate for you?"
"Of course you can read Old Norse runes," Magnus said, rolling his eyes. "I am a man of many talents," said Jace.
"Also, my dad was an abusive taskmaster."
"Fair point." "So," Jace resumed, "the Sveffenthorn is made of black adamas?"
"Which is what exactly?" said Clary.
"Adamas corrupted by a demon realm," Magnus said. "Very rare stuff."
He traced his finger along the illustration of the thorn.
"It ties a warlock to that realm and its ruler, and the warlock draws power from it, makes warlocks much stronger than usual."
"That doesn't seem so bad," said Alec.
"Until the power overwhelms them, and they either die or are stabbed 3 times by the thorn and become the willing lackey of the demon who rules the realm," added Magnus.
"That seems pretty bad," Alec corrected himself.
"So it's basically magic meth?" said Clary.
Jay said, "The spiral labyrinth forbade its use in... wait, let me convert the date... 1500 or so.
"Why would Xin Yun say it was a gift?" Alec said.
"Because she's crazy," offered Magnus. "The realm has to be DU, of course. But why would Xin Yun thorn herself? Even she isn't crazy enough to kill herself for a temporary power boost."
"Maybe she thinks her demon daddy can prevent her from dying," suggested Clary. "The question is, how do we prevent Magnus from dying?" Alec said.
He realized he had curled his hands into fists and made himself uncurl them.
"Maybe an eldest curse can handle it," suggested Magnus. "Maybe they think there's something in the Book of the White that would help." "I would guess that either you need to go to DU as soon as you can, or make sure you never go to DU," said Jace.
Alec rubbed his temples with his fingers.
"Maybe Xin Yun will show up again and we can ask her in between fights with her demon army. Simon and Isabel are supposed to be looking into the whereabouts of the DU portal,"
said Clary. They all looked over at where they'd last seen the two of them. A stern-looking goblin in rimless spectacles appeared to be angrily lecturing Simon, who was making apologetic gestures. Behind them, it appeared that they'd upset a reading circle of toddler-aged hobgoblins. Isabel saw the others and came over, a stack of books under her arm. She put them down with a sigh.
Can we come back when we have time to browse? Local history isn't really my thing.
Did you find anything about the location of the old portal? Said Alec.
Not really. Simon was writing down the list of places mentioned, but it just reads like a tourist guide to the city.
Isabel sounded frustrated.
It's like every famous place is rumored to be the site of the portal.
Shinyun and Ragnar must know, said Magnus. They have some way of communicating with Samael, and we're pretty sure he's in DU.
So we're back to hoping they show up, said Clary.
Or checking out every one of these possible locations, any one of which could turn out to be an open portal to hell. Just saying. Simon came over to join them, running his hands through his hair.
Word of advice, guys, never piss off a goblin bookseller. They are strict.
I hear you got nothing, Jay said brightly. Simon gave him a look.
We don't have nothing, said Alec. We know more about the thorn.
And I did some reading about DU, said Simon.
He plonked his stack of books on top of Isabel's.
It's Chinese hell, right? Said Clary.
Well, Simon said, not really. It's maybe more like Chinese purgatory. Souls go there to be tortured for their sins for some amount of time before they get reincarnated. It all seems to be very organized. Lots of different hells, each with a different ruler. There are judges, and they decide what hell you go to, and civil servants keep it all running. Or at least, he added, it was organized under Yan Luo's rule, but Yan Luo is gone.
So now what? Said Alec.
Reports vary, said Isabel dryly.
Nobody knows, because nobody's been there since Yan Luo died, Simon added.
Samael could be trying to gain energy from all the soul torturing, Alec offered.
That seems like a lot of work, Magnus said, frowning. I've never thought of Samael as the kind to run a civil service. He could just be squatting there.
Clary looked troubled.
I feel like I should ask, she said. If we find an open portal to DU, are we going to go through it?
Before anyone could answer, the front doors burst open and Tien came running up to them. He sounded out of breath.
I'd hoped I'd find you here, he said without preamble. Jin Feng's parents want to see you at once. They said it's important. They said the one with the chains must arm himself.
Everyone except Alec and Magnus looked baffled.
What chains? Said Jace.
Magnus sighed and unbuttoned his shirt, pulling it open to reveal the angry red chains extending from his wound and disappearing into his sleeves. Alec could not say for sure, but he thought they had become more well-defined than before. And had there also been chains extending down toward his legs and up toward his throat before? He couldn't remember. The other shadow hunters stared at Magnus. The bespectacled goblin who had yelled at Simon appeared unexpectedly beside them. He spoke in a hissed stage whisper.
I am sorry, but I must ask you to leave. You're disturbing the other customers. They're not used to shadow hunters in the first place, and now you're taking off your clothes.
Got it, said Alec. We were just leaving.
The gold piece says we're allowed to prevent you from coming entirely, the goblin went on.
He had clearly prepared a speech and was going to deliver it no matter what.
But we said no. The palace is a neutral territory. All of the shadow world should be welcome, but we didn't mean for a whole squad of Nephilim to...
Yes, yes, Alec said. We're going.
He began herding them toward the doors.
Also,
the goblin continued,
this isn't a lending library. Those books are for sale, and now we'll have to reshelve all of them.
Magnus had been slowly buttoning his shirt back up. Now he turned and put his hand on the goblin's shoulder in a friendly manner. The fairy looked at it as if it were a poisonous snake.
"Sir, my apologies for my companions," he said. "I take full responsibility. They were only helping me with some of my research. I'm Magnus Bane, High Warlock of New York, and I'm going to buy all of these."
The goblin looked suspicious.
"I know of you. You're only the High Warlock of Brooklyn."
"Technicalities," said Magnus. "The point is, sir, may I know your name?" The goblin sniffed.
"Well, if you must know, it's Cthulhuana Lima Cheesy-E."
"Really?" said Magnus. "Well, anyway, Kef, may I call you Kef?"
"You may not,"
Magnus pressed on. "If you'll just ring all these up and have the bill sent to the Spiral Labyrinth, the books can be delivered to the Mansion Hotel, if you will." Simon had helpfully piled the books into a single large stack and presented them to Cthulhuana Lima Cheesy-E, who staggered a bit under the weight, but was clearly not about to lose a decent-sized sale to the Spiral Labyrinth.
"Of course, Mr. Bane," he said through clenched teeth. "But if that's all, my staff and I would appreciate..."
"Yes," said Magnus, "we were just leaving." "Sorry," said Simon to the goblin, who made a hissing noise at him. Looking a bit dazed, Tien led them out of the store. When the doors opened, a bird in a cage above it sang a snatch of song, haunting and sweet. "Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild." On the steps outside, Alec said to Magnus, "Can you really build things to the Spiral Labyrinth?"
"Let's find out," Magnus said. "Now, I've heard the one with chains must arm himself, so, Tien, lead the way."
Chapter 10. The Black and White